Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit VoicesOfWrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Wrestling, where we like professional wrestling too. This week in the news, not a whole lot, but we do ask the question, who will induct Lex Luger into the WWE Hall of Fame? I'm sure Chris is just itching to get to that one.
I'm glad you mentioned this. I actually have a speech prepared about give me a little bit of a lead-in.
Yes, in the Lazy River, ice-cold takes on Dynasty and some very mid-weekly television. An Invader Club, a heel turn so good, Rich Kreich came into our Discord channel and begged you all not to watch it because he'll make everything else look like crap. Ole Anderson turns on Dusty Rhodes in Georgia in 1980. This is Shake Them Ropes. I am Jeff Hawkins. That is Chris Novembrino on the other side. And because next week is just going to be so wrestling heavy, quick plug, I'm doing the Fightful post-WrestleMania shows. This is going to be some lazy rivering, and I am starting with a little bit of music geekdom / respect must be paid. I think I said this on our Ask Us Anything, and I'm not sure, but have I ever mentioned what musical act I have seen the most in concert, Chris?
No. What was it, Traffic?
No, it's not. People would think it'd be Steve Winwood related because of my love of Steve Winwood, and you'd be almost correct. Shockingly enough, the musical act I have seen the most in concert, and it's not Rush either, it's Blondie. I have seen Blondie like 8 or 9 times in concert because I was friends with someone who loved Blondie, and then we dated, and then there was unpleasantness, but we went to every Blondie concert, like from 1998 through about 2011 or whatever. Rest in peace to the only drummer of Blondie, Clem Burke. Also filled in for the Romantics, played for Iggy Pop, filled in with the Ramones for a short spell. He was Elvis Ramone on a couple of live recordings.
What would that be, like 89, 90? Man, what was he in the band?
I think it was very late 80s when...
Like, it would have been, like, must have been the first time Marky dipped from the band?
Yes, I think so.
Okay.
Also played with Dramarama. He also, last time I saw him was a couple years ago when the Go-Go's got inducted into the Hall of Fame. He filled in for Gina Shock because Gina was still fighting over royalties with the band. But Clem Burke is not quite on my Mount Rushmore of drummers, but he's in that second tier. As I like to say, his influences are guys that are on my Mount Rushmore, particularly Hal Blaine and Earl Palmer, who were both part of the Wrecking Crew. Earl Palmer, Little Richard's drummer. As he once told David Lowry of Cracker, I invented this stuff. But Clem Burke, just because of the nature of Blondie being such a diverse type of musical styles band, started out as a punk rocker in the CBGBs, and then as Blondie, you know, expounded their musical horizons, became great at a bunch of other things. Listen to his drum fills on Dreamin' and Detroit 442 and Union City Blue. I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic stuff out of him, and he never stopped. It's like he was the only drummer for Blondie, and then once he got in there, he just kept gigging until he was, until his death, which, I mean, they just had another gig here in Los Angeles back in April, I think. He was fighting cancer up until then, but it's a little weird to geek out about Blondie. I don't think we've ever talked about my...
No, but they're one of those bands. I like all those power pop musicians, like Cheap Trick, Bunny, what's his name?
Bunny Carlos.
Bunny Carlos, great drummer. You have like a whole bunch of great drummers in the late 70s, early 80s, before new wave electronic drums really takes over. They're some of my favorite drummers. I think The Knack even has a pretty good drummer.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Romantics drummer is all right. Clem Burke, I think, is he the one who's playing on that live album?
He fills in when the drummer leaves. He's there right after What I Like About You.
So he's like on Talking in Your Sleep and stuff like that?
I believe so.
Okay, so like that.
He also
a bunch of radio singles. I mean, you could be listening to like 80s radio all day and hear Clem Burke on the drum kit on Blondie playing in 7/8 there in Heart of Glass.
Where Heart of Glass, that? Yeah.
Yeah, Heart of Glass gives you a little 7 count there in the bridge.
He's played the reggae beat and the tide is high, and then he has to go over to do punk with Detroit 442 or whatever, where it's just like, just doing like drum fills all the time. He's also on, this was one that was interesting to me, but possibly my favorite Eurythmics song, which is Missionary Man. He's the drums on that. I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of cool. Neat little song.
Nice.
That they did late. Go deep into the Blondie catalog and you find a drummer of great skill. He's another one of these guys, I think, that came over from jazz and became a rock drummer, which is always, strong in terms
that's,
of that.
That's where a lot of these guys came from. Billy Ficca from Television was like an orchestral drummer who then switched to rock punk drumming and just bringing some of that other genre stuff into rock drumming, kind of the real art of rock drumming.
Yeah, that's where Hal Blaine, the aforementioned, he was from the Wrecking Crew and came in and did a lot of the Wall of Sound stuff with Phil Spector and all those Wrecking. I watched that documentary a while ago, and it's like all these bands that weren't bands until the Wrecking Crew had recorded the music, and then they got a bunch of clean-cut white kids to learn how to play the parts, so to speak. If you watch, there's a documentary, it's on Amazon, if you really want to go into and look at just how deep, most 60s, like almost like most 60s songs were recorded by these session guys called the Wrecking Crew, and it's just absolutely amazing. Highly recommend it. But this is a wrestling show. I have dawdled long enough. Let's get to this non-news because there wasn't a lot of news this week. Lex Luger wanted Sting to introduce him at the Hall of Fame. He claims he asked WWE for Sting and DDP and never heard back. And this is the Wrestling Observer talking. As best as we can tell, neither Sting nor WWE has contacted Tony Khan, who would have to approve it. WWE also didn't approve it to Luger. Another guy that would be a possibility, Ric Flair, is also still under contract with AEW due to the Woo Energy cross promotion. And boy, what a cross promotion that was. So you say you have a speech written, Chris? We could always I think.
Yeah, no, here we go. You ready?
Yes.
Ladies and gentlemen, dignitaries of sport, acolytes of athleticism, and the eternal witnesses of greatness. Today, we stand at the precipice of history, not merely to commemorate a man, but to immortalize a force, a phenomenon, a gladiator carved not just of muscle, but of will. It is no exaggeration, nor is it hyperbole, to say that we gather to enshrine a titan into the pantheon of immortals. Lex Luger tonight is entering the WWE Hall of Fame. This is not merely a Hall of Fame induction. No! This is the formal recognition of a size.
Yeah, you had it there. You lost it there with the emphaticness. That's the problem. We got
Hold
you.
On. I'm okay. Back.
Get it back.
No! This is the formal recognition of a seismic presence. One that has rippled through the annals of professional wrestling.
It's annals, you dumbass. All right,
like
I'm cutting you off. No, you're done.
The Appalachian skyline.
I'm playing you off like the Sandman at Showtime at the Apollo.
Total package. You didn't even let me get to the Yokozuna stuff.
No, I'm not, because this is sacrilegious almost. Look, I think eventually there will be a deal be made, and probably for Owen Hart footage. That would be my guess, but we'll see. WWE also, for the first time in 4 years, bringing back the legacy wing of the Hall of Fame. They announced that Kamala, Dory Funk Sr., and Ivan Koloff would be inducted. I am of the opinion that I am shocked that Ivan Koloff, who held the Triple WF title and was a big deal back when those things were kind of a big deal, you know, the whole Bruno feud and everything, was not given, you know, a Bruno-like induction. Instead, it's going to be kind of a, yes, it's going to be like the technical Oscars, you know, and in a ceremony separate from the official thing, we also gave out awards for cinematography and whatnot, you know, that kind of thing. You know, Kamala could have been either, but of course he has passed away, I believe, so it's one of those things. And, you know, Dory Funk Sr., you know, Terry's no longer alive, and, you know, Dory is, you know, a little worse for wear, but I have no problem with any of these. It's just, and I like that they're honoring history. This tends to be, I think this is kind of like a difference between Triple H and Vince running the show, but any thoughts on any of that?
No, not particularly.
Okay, we'll continue. Trick Williams of NXT set to guest star in the CW's All-American. I think this is an example of what we like to call quote-unquote good crossover stuff. Get him out there, get more of the year younger guys, especially since it's a youth-oriented, supposedly, company. And the CW is all about those types of programs. So I'm thinking this is a good move by NXT.
Yeah, right? Trick Williams still needs more. So
acting lessons might help.
Right. That's what I mean. Yeah, go out there and do it.
The rest of this is kind of just soft news, but we'll do it anyways. Pac injured on Wednesday's Dynamite. Chris Jericho looking to take some time off as he has a Fozzy tour. And then about that Tiffany Stratton Charlotte tete-a-tete on the mic last week. One person internally in WWE said that Tiffany Stratton's 0-for-3 line was scripted, but others who would know indicated the marriage line part was not. Charlotte Flair making mention of Ludwig Kaiser in her DMs. Also not planned. Now, I have a little inside intel on previous angles. Charlotte has a little bit of a act out and then apologize in the morning issue. this happened during, if you might recall, most famously the, and this made the news also, the belt throwing incident with Becky Lynch.
Right, right.
Yeah, she does not like being humiliated on TV, and you know, I can see why, even though it's in character, but I mean, you're getting a little bit close to the vest. Number one,
the character's crossing over, right? Like the character is just becoming her,
yes,
especially with the offenses.
Yes. And nobody other than the most obsessive of wrestling fan knows that Tiffany Stratton's dating Ludwig Kaiser. You know, your average TV viewer doesn't. I don't even think Chris knows. I don't even think Chris knows.
That was news to me. I just know.
There you go.
Cool. Good for them.
And nobody knows that Charlotte Flair's been divorced 3 times. Nobody knew she was.
No. I know. I remember Bram, but like that's about it.
Andrade.
Oh yeah, Andrade. Yeah.
And then God, it was the other one. I can't remember.
But yeah, for me, the problem, especially with the Tiffany Charlotte thing here, is you have the Becky belt throwing incident, and now this that whole angle was built around this I'm a Nepo baby thing, which, okay, that's the character. I do understand that, except that the offenses all happened inside of that character, and the offenses are actually emblematic of the character. So at this point, it's not even inception. It's just convergence of the character with the human.
Yeah, I don't understand. You really need to sit both down and go, look, we're trying to create heat for the two characters, not heat for the two people, kind of a thing. And you really have to and the problem is they haven't done anything with this Tiffany Stratton character once they turned her baby face. She's still Tiffy time. She's still, you know, she does the point at her wrist. She does the, you know, the bleach blonde girl, high pitch voice. But she's still the same character she was when she was a heel. But now she's just getting cheered for some reason.
I got to go a different direction on this. One, think the analysis is slightly off here. Charlotte's the problem. She's the recurring problem.
Yes, I would agree. Yes.
So, and then secondarily, the problem on the Tiffany side is that she was just floundering through a miasma of catchphrases and various loose characterizations she's done at the past. And if it was me backstage, especially if I wanted to kind of get Charlotte reined in, and I know Tiffany's a big girl and she's tough, I'd go, Tiffany, you just speak from the heart. We just need to like Tiffany Stratton, and whatever comes out of Tiffany Stratton's mouth, if it's good, we're gonna like it. I wouldn't mind it getting real.
Okay, well, here's
But I think the problem for Tiffany
is
that
Charlotte.
she wasn't even able to get real on Charlotte without having to keep dipping back to her catchphrases.
That too. And yeah, it's one
I
of the things
that gloves offer
in the
I'd
training.
Like, all right,
it is
go for it.
Yeah. The real problem here is it started poorly when we brought out Charlotte, and Charlotte wasn't sure whether she was going to be a babyface or a heel. And so she decided to test the crowd by dipping her toe in both pools and then not making a decision. And then it eventually became she's a heel. And unfortunately, it became one of those things where it's like, yes, you're back, but you're immediately thrown into a title program. And people don't want to necessarily see you in the title program, because then the title program becomes about how you're the queen and how many title reigns you've had. There's nothing to the Charlotte title reigns, unfortunately.
No.
They're just numbers, and she's a flair. Woo. You know, that's been ever since Sasha left. She hasn't had that, because see, the positive of having Sasha and even a Becky in there is that there are other horsewomen by which she always measured her success. Also kind of a negative, because that's why she would act out, is that she wanted to be the alpha of the horsewomen quite a bit, and if somebody else was getting pushed heavier than she was, that means she must be lacking in some way, so she started to panic in some form, it would appear. But
yeah,
without that, she's just, I am Reed's legacy, and you don't want to make Reed jokes for the most part. because they're terrible and they've done that before and that just didn't work. But you don't have anything. What do you have to attack Charlotte Flair on other than go away heat for the most part?
Yeah, I like, or you have to get really in between the weeds here and, yes, yeah, start making this like weird thing that would make sense to you and me, this like nuanced discussion about how Charlotte's expectations throughout her career have been overly indulged in a way that is simply just not fair to anyone else, including her own horsewomen contemporaries.
Yes.
She was always basically allowed to slightly underachieve, slightly underperform, and get more opportunities than both Bayley, especially Bayley, and even Becky. Becky had to really kind of like, you know, rock the boat. And then Sasha had the dip. You know, like she did her thing, but I think there might be an argument that Sasha's still here if we hadn't taken some of that Sasha equity and given it to Charlotte. Just my thought.
Yeah, and put her in the tag team division and then not make the tag teams worth a damn because Vince didn't believe in them and stuff like that. Yeah, I'm with you there. We are fully into the Lazy River Wrestling criticism, whatever you watch, whatever you had time for. Dynasty happened, and I'll tell you my Dynasty experience. I turned on during 0 hour. My brother was here. He saw the crew, and he goes, "Those guys are wrestlers? What's with those jackets?" Made it through that. He enjoyed the match. He liked the high-flying stuff. If, as you recall, the last time he saw wrestling was Royal Rumble a couple years ago when we were in Kansas City, and he saw the Ricochet, Logan Paul, John Woo spot in the Rumble, and he, you know, he marked out for that. But I then started to record Dynasty, and I left for drinks with friends of my brothers who live here out here in Los Angeles. I came home. The show was still on, and it was time for the main event. And that's after 3 hours at a bar. So I watched it over the next couple of days, and that's always the best way to do these pay-per-views. Look, the wrestling was good. I'd be more forgiving of Dynasty if it had ended the Swerve Moxley angle of some sort, but instead it just moved on to the next story. And for me personally, I don't want that necessarily as the end of your pay-per-view. I don't mind screwjob finishes. I don't mind heat at the end of your pay-per-view. I don't mind unhappy endings. I grew up in the NWA where Dusty did that crap all the time. I came out of Dynasty going, okay, if the Bucks are joining up with the Death Riders, you need to make that make sense on Wednesday. Don't get me wrong. Mark Briscoe and Kyle Fletcher had a banger. The six man had a banger. I loved the Cope, the FTR turn on Cope. It was fantastic. There was a lot of the two women's matches I thought both over-delivered as well. I thought Megan Bain and Toni Storm was good. And I thought, you know, once they got going, I thought Mercedes and Julia Hart was just fine too. I overall enjoyed Dynasty. It was long. It took me 2 days to watch it. I'm glad I didn't watch it live. But at the end, I'm going, all right, you need to make that Bucks running away from Jon Moxley for their lives while shredding papers and whatnot. You have had 2 or 3 months to make this make sense and come up with a story. If it's just blood and guts time, which it appears is the reason for this, you need to make that make some narrative clarity for me to buy into this angle. And then Dynamite happened, and the first 20 minutes of this show, I went, huh?
Man, Dynamite. I now have an approach to the pay-per-views where I wait to see the TV after to see what still matters on the pay-per-view.
Oh,
a few days later.
Okay.
Did
you have any Dynasty thoughts before we move into Dynamite or no?
Not really, because they didn't end the Death Riders stuff, which if they had, I would have circled back around too, because I'm bored as hell of this and I'm eager for them to do something else. And obviously you saw the FTR Cope stuff kind of coming from a mile away here.
But it was still well done.
Yeah. I might circle back around to that. If you're saying it was as good as it was,
I love, I'll just put it this way. Cash puts on the neck brace meant for Cope, gets on the gurney, and then Dax comes in and revives him, and he gets up, takes it off, goes, I'm healed! And then they walk off. It was phenomenal heel stuff.
Nice.
But the tone of the Bucks coming in, after, I mean, we start with a Moxley promo going, Bucks, you don't know what you've gotten yourself into. Then a Moxley match against Shibata randomly.
It was random. I enjoyed it for what it was.
It was fine,
That's actually where I was going to go is this is sort of emblematic of AEW. We have a lot of like no reason matches that are perfectly fine, but are also not surprising or intriguing. The Shibata thing was fine.
The Bucks needed to come in on bended knee begging for Moxley's forgiveness or Moxley needed to kill the two of them. I don't know which, but we needed some consistency there. They came in cocky and you know, kind of, you know, give it up for him. Kind of phony, say, what's his face from Die Hard, where he's talking to, you know.
Alan Rickman?
Well, not Alan Rickman, but the guy who gets shot by Alan Rickman.
Oh, okay.
You know, that character.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's fine, but it's like one of those things where it's like, we watched you guys run for friggin' dear life, and then you decided to interfere in his match. And Moxley, who's looking to basically kill everything in AEW because people haven't lived up to their standards or whatnot, are coming in here like, good game, everybody. And I'm like, no, something needs to happen here.
Their motives aren't aligned. These are one, two villains, two villain groups who do not have aligned motives, and three, they really are sort of mutually exclusive goals, neither of which lend themselves to being obvious baby faces. The Bucks enjoy being douchebag VP characters, so that's what they're fighting for. This is not laudable. They're not about to become your favorite vice presidents. And Moxley wants to purge your favorite wrestling company of some of your favorite wrestlers. Ipso facto, he is not likely to become your favorite wrestler right now in this story world. And also, as you mentioned, Moxley was chasing the Bucks out of there as they were shredding papers, and Chris Daniels was begging them, who will save us? Who will save us now? Please come back. Why wouldn't Moxley have just smashed them? And then out comes Kenny Omega.
Kenny Omega in shorts and a sweatshirt top, looking like he just got off of a plane or off of a stream. Way to dress up for the job, Kenny. And meanders and forgets his half of his promo, tries to make the shredding make sense, but it didn't. And he's just talking in that passive aggressive Kenny Omega tone where it's like, I'm the best bout machine, but oh, by the way, Bucks, you tried to kill me last time, remember, with the diverticulitis and the ambulance and stuff,
right?
The emotional resonance in Kenny Omega's could not give two craps about two shih tzus who were giving craps, it would seem. I went, God, everybody's just phoning in their promos tonight, aren't they? If Kenny had come out angry and seething and ready to kill the Bucks, I'm all for that. But instead, right. it's exposition time with Kenny Omega, and I'm just like, where's the heart in this promo right now, Kenny? About two guys who tried to kill you.
Moral indignation towards both groups. He's upset with the Bucks because this is about, you know, building something better or whatever. And look at you guys. You both dress like assholes, Matt, you know, blah, blah, blah. Nick now apparently, or Matt, now you're apparently doing steroids, which is a fun thing to just kind of throw out there. good material, guys. And then he should also be mad at Moxley and the Death Riders because they just want to tear down the company. I mean, sort of, you can tell the basic story of, okay, blah, blah, blah. You could say you want to tear down a bad institution. You can say you want to drain the swamp or whatever. But what are you going to do to replace it? And what Moxley and the Death Riders have done to replace it is not something that most of us are happy with. That is basically the nut of what Kenny Omega should, you know, be arguing here. Not bad George Carlin, Don Rickles material.
And then, well, Okada comes out just to say, hey, I'm here.
I'm also here.
I am also here. Hello, everybody.
I am a character in this show as well.
I'm going to go surf with Nakamura now. You'll excuse me.
It's a show where you have a bunch of characters, but motivations don't matter. So they just arrive on your screen, and they are truly ships passing in the night.
And then it ends with the best one, which is Swerve comes out doing whose house, Swerve's house, you know, Nana dancing, gets in the ring. The Bucks leave. Okada leaves. Kenny kind of gives a fist bump. And then Swerve decides to get angry. And I'm just like, they just screwed you out of the title. The Bucks are in the building just walking away. And you're in here. Okay, it's time to go buck hunting. No, get out of the ring and go after those guys who just screwed you last night. Between that and then later, Hangman still being a seething ball of rage after his emotional moment yesterday, where he should have been a little bit more, he should have been calmer, to be honest with you. It's like he got an apology, and he might be driven now, but he's still, you know, it's one of those things where he shouldn't have been talking to Nana. He should have been talking to the Bucks, because the Bucks were the ones who came in and said, we did that for you, Hanger, as opposed to, tell Swerve not to get in my way. I wasn't trying to do that. Well, nobody thought you were trying to do that. They just saw you look back and forth. We have TV. We can see this. I mean, I liked the part with him and Nana. Don't get me wrong. I thought that was good.
Okay.
I like him not taking Nana's apology.
Okay, I like that too. My whole thing is I think it's ridiculous for Nana and Swerve to ever expect redemption on breaking into his house.
Yes, and threatening his child.
And threatening his child, right? Like, I don't actually have a problem with the idea that there's no redemption here for Swerve. But that, you know, when it makes sense, Paige will, quote unquote, do the right thing in service of Swerve. Like, he won't just like go out of his way to sabotage him.
I get that. And I think there should be that. I just don't think that Hangman should be the Tasmanian devil from the Bugs Bunny cartoons.
That was my next thing is that then we get to Hangman's emotional performances. I'm aware. You tell me, I believe you. The people like this performance. For me, this is like every week Adam Page is emotionally erratic and he just plays it at 8, 9, or 10. And
it's that guy in the office that's always grumbling and saying things to himself and you don't know if he's gonna, it's like even on days where he's not angry, you know what he's not angry at, you're afraid to ask him what to have for lunch and stuff. You know, it's like, dude, there are levels to the anger. And you just don't, does he just walk around for 2 hours backstage just, where is everybody?
that's my thing. It's like, right, he could just now be, his anger can morph into a quiet, calm prickishness. People come up to ask him a question. He stops them. He gives an answer. If you want to keep him a tweener, sometimes it's not a bad answer. But he's still an ass. He'll cut you off. He's not trying to hear your talk.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, right. It's not. You said Taz earlier. Now I'm seeing like a combination of Taz and Yosemite Sam.
Yes.
Tarnation? Tarnation. Yeah.
I watched this. I go, we have 7 weeks to the next pay-per-view. We could actually let this thing breathe for a little bit and actually build something here and think of reasons.
I'm very sad that the reset on the main title picture, it continues to wait on, because this main event scene right now is just, it's a bad story. And it's been going on a long time now, it feels like. This Death Riders thing has been dragging on for some time.
And it hasn't heightened. It's just we don't like these people, these kids these days. They can't wrestle for crap, and they're soft, and they get paid too much money, and then he's not taking out anybody.
He hasn't gotten rid of anybody. He hasn't added anyone into the Death Riders.
He broke one member of Private Party's hand, and that hand was healed a week later in the tag team title match. That's it.
That's it. I mean, they have not taken over. You have the Bucks here again, and so now it seems like they want to kind of be back in the main storyline. And certainly all it does is kind of confuse the main story. And for me, like, this is kind of what you picked out for Vader Club. I just think wrestling is enhanced or diminished by the story that it is inhabiting. Like, the story, the promos, and all of that stuff are not divorced from your ability to enjoy the wrestling. Later on, we train ourselves to just be able to hop in and watch an archival match, but probably remember your initial experience, you and the listener, of watching a match in a vacuum and that weird feeling of not having the weekly wrestling as context going into it.
That's me, man. I can't watch classic. I mean, there are people on this network that watch classic, like Joe and Rich watch classic wrestling, and they'll watch classic matches, and I'll talk classic matches in those channels, but I'm like, I feel empty. The match in and of itself is the B story to the angles and the promos that happen coming in. Like, when I watch a match, I want to see all the promos leading up to that match. That for me is where I get juiced and jazzed for the match. It's not the match itself. I mean, the match itself is fine, but it's like, you know, it's why I can't enjoy PWG all that much when I went. I came out feeling empty because I was just like, okay, these are great matches in a vacuum.
Yeah, and I learned to enjoy that for what it is, right? Yeah. But I almost think it's like, for a music listener, do you like listening to a band on an album more? Do you like watching a band live more?
Yeah.
Do you enjoy listening to music on recording more? Do you enjoy seeing it live more?
Do you like the studio take, or do you like what they do it in the live version?
Well, yes. Do you enjoy recorded live versions or watching a live version? What is your preferred medium experience? These are, like, it's literally just different for everyone, is my thought on this. But I do think you, if you become, like, kind of a broader fan of music, right, you have to learn how to experience an orchestra live. Like, it's a learned skill. It's because it is a different experience.
I will say I enjoyed MJF and the Hurt Business. I thought that was a lot of fun. Him going in there and standing there while Shelton Benjamin tries to keep it together. That's the kind of comedy I crave. It's so unrepentantly stupid that I loved it. This angle intrigues me to no end.
Yes, this angle, it intrigues me, but I it's intriguing in part because it's really hard to see how it fits into with everything else.
I think, I mean, Tony may have tipped the hand because he said, because when talking about the FTR thing, it was the pinnacle of evil that he saw. I think we may be getting a reformation of the pinnacle in some ways, but who knows?
Okay.
The rest of the weekly TV also had just bad angles. That's my theme for this week, Chris. I hate to kind of stampede on you a little bit here, but it's like NXT was all about just bad angles and throwing people into matches. And then, like, even the good stuff on Raw,
bad matches too.
Like, don't get me wrong, Bayley and Lyra Valkyria had a hell of a match, but it's just to lead to tag team schmozziness on WrestleMania because we've given up on the Roxanne Bailey program for some reason, I guess. I don't know. But yeah, that NXT, it's just like, okay, Julia's back, but we haven't really made any excuse as to why. It's just she's back now because the visa issues were cleared up. But we're not going to explain why on TV she's now in there, and this is now a four-way for the title.
I mean, she did. Her explanation basically is like, there are no friends. I'm just in it for myself, which... I mean, is a form of an explanation, but man, that entire that match was rough. Jordynne Grace
had a bad night.
Oof, she got lucky. Bad night
on that dive.
That dive, That dive could have went real bad for her.
We beat all three members of our main event for stand and deliver to this group of, just to get them into a parking lot brawl with the pseudo Italians. I'm just like, all right, that's a choice that was made on this show leading into WrestleMania weekend.
Yeah. Jasmine Nix just continues to not really. And this is another rough one. Hanky Tank's another rough one too. I thought we saw something with these guys at one point, but like, boy, they're just there.
They are. They're not even Public Enemy level brawling anymore. It's just they're trying to be good wrestlers. And although I did howl at Montez Ford saying, I watched the product. I just went, yeah, that's funny.
One thing I will say is I continue to really like Yoshiki and Amora.
Are they breaking them up?
I mean,
it feels like it. I'm like, no, that's a mistake.
I'm kind of down for Yoshiki to get the win over Briggs and then be in the main event picture.
I don't think that's the way they go.
I don't think it is either. I'm just saying that I would be okay with that.
I was a little shocked that they put Izzy Dame over Maddie to get into that ladder match. But I guess she's going to be like the base for people flying off the ladder onto her kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, right. We haven't actually broken down. I don't know who's in there. Yeah.
It's her. It's Zarya. It's Sol Ruka. It's Kalani is in there. I believe Fallon is in there too. She may have won. It's the schmoz, but they put some of the youngins in there to see how they'll do in a ladder match, you know, kind of a thing. That's their test, so to speak, is let's see if you can keep it together during this plunder match where things can go wrong very easily because ladders don't always deal with the plan. And then that North American title schmoz. I'm just like, here's all the people we signed from AEW in one match.
Yep. And then, dude, Dark State is already just below. We are below Retribution,
this
right?
This can't be it. This cannot. There has to be somebody pulling the strings in the back, right?
I think it's Dion Lennox. I think the story here is going to be that Dion Lennox is really an evil mastermind because he was all book educated and everything. And he tried to be Mr. Nice Guy, but then he learned that being nice doesn't always work here in WWE. And he got passed up. And these guys also got passed up. And you know what they're going to do now? They're going to take over and cause chaos. And yes. Nothing's going to be the same until next week.
I got backtrack on that North American thing. Eddie Thorpe pulling the race card.
Yes.
Chris, you live in Albuquerque.
I do.
Would you like to expound on this angle a little bit? I live in the stolen land of Los Angeles. I don't know.
I am definitely in a state where we are fond of pointing out you are on native land. That is a popular bumper sticker out here. Look,
is this bad or worse? Because I don't know, but it's one of those.
I'm going to go bad, right? Like it is bad. Like it is worse in the sense that we have now going back to this again, and it appears to be like his defining characterization trait, even more than the annoying techno guy stuff, is he is this guy who's into techno, but also like at the party will pull you aside and tell you about all the atrocities all across North America that happened to indigenous peoples. But I mean, like, it's a belt, man. It's a belt about a continent, and like the continent was here before people were even on the continent. So, like, what are we doing?
I have a far more cynical interpretation of this, and I have no proof of this, and I haven't asked anybody about this. But this feels like. I don't know if this is Eddie Thorpe's idea. I almost call it Eddie George.
I really hope it's not. Just
well, I hope it is, because if it's not, then it's a cynical take on DEI hiring and my thing. You know, what some people think of people who use that as a crutch, where it's like, I deserve this because I'm an aggrieved minority type of thing. And I think it gets even worse. That's why I say, is this bad or worse?
Okay, I'm with you then. I certainly get how it scans like that, because my big point about, like, you know, Thorpe is like, look, like an intercontinental title or a European title or inside of even the WWE universe, right? When we are referring to these titles, we are fundamentally referring to, like, the continental landmass, not, you know, nothing owned by nobody, right? Like, so, like, Thorpe, yes, to your point, Thorpe's argument is very bad because he's claiming North America, which is just a continental name, and then basically making what could potentially scan as some sort of weird DEI. I have a claim to the North American title because I'm an indigenous person.
Well, here's what I'm thinking.
Would you be as ridiculous as Ludwig Kaiser or something saying, I have a claim to the European title because I'm European?
Yes, but to me, it's kind of a, all right, Eddie, we're going to pitch this to you. You're going to feel aggrieved because of this, but on our part, we're pitching this to you because it's a cynical take on all these whiny people who claim that they're victims when they're not, et cetera. And it's kind of a two-way street type thing. That's my fear here. I don't have any proof of that.
No, I mean, like, if let's say this is not Eddie's idea and this is instead Shawn Michaels' idea, you could see how maybe it is kind of coming through that.
Maybe I don't want to ascribe that either. That's why I kind of asked, sort of a thing. So we'll.
No. I the second I heard it though, I just immediately was like, I said something I won't use on the show here. But I rolled my eyes very heavily. Let's say hearing that we were dusting off the old chestnut of Eddie Thorpe is going to somehow make things right for the natives in America by having an NXT career.
See, I went even more cynical than that. I went, no, this is Eddie Thorpe cynically using his race to then say he was aggrieved type of a thing, but being pitched to him as, no, you're going to actually have legitimate grievances type of a thing, I guess.
Yeah,
I don't know.
I don't like it. I wish they wouldn't do it. It's not adding.
No, it's one of those things also where you look back on you and you go, well, what were they like 3 years from now? You'll look back at it and go, no, that was wrong to do right there. You know, it's like bringing up Ron Simmons or Booker T's race in an angle. You don't want to do that necessarily just for the cheap heat type
right.
of thing.
Yeah, it's cheap heat. And I mean, it's cheap heat. And like, I don't know, especially if you're using Native Americans, like, damn, haven't they had it rough enough? Come on, man.
You know, it would be like having a Black Panther type, well, I mean, the Nation of Domination type thing. You know, it's that same kind of, you know, that the original Nation, not the
right.
Owen Hart version or Crutch version. I have nothing else on my card. Is there anything you wanted to bring up?
Raw happened. Do we have anything to really say about Raw?
I thought Jimmy Uso's promo or Jey Uso's promo was okay. It's just one of those things where it's like, at this point, I want Jey Uso to feel inevitable more than I don't know if I can beat Gunther. He's far more stronger and big, and because we've done that story before. We've done the affectionate underdog story type of thing.
Yeah,
I want Jey Uso to be confident.
Yes, I want the challenger in your face to the point where we see Gunther scared, and the reason we as fans are having doubts is because Jey Uso's coming on so strong. Like,
it came close to that. I will admit that, you know, where he's like, go call your mother, you know, kind of a thing. I mean, it came close, but I think because, like, Jey Uso's not small, but he's not a man of size, you know. He's not a guy that where you instantly look and go, yeah, that's a guy who can carry my world title type of a thing.
No,
comes off just a little fake.
I would have, I mean, just kind of going a different route on this to give us a fresh story here. I would have Jey Uso, you know, maybe do this promo and then beat the shit out of Gunther. Like, steel chaired everything. It put fear in Gunther. And now we turn the tables on Gunther. You took out Jey. I'm going to chase you every day until WrestleMania. You're like, this is going to be the longest 2 weeks of your life.
Yeah, I'm down with that. Monday would be like 4 days.
The second week that would So I would have had him last week. I would have went big angle, steel chair to the back of Gunther. He beats the crap out of Gunther, and he leaves Gunther laying.
And then he cuts the promo saying, "Call your mother or whatever."
Call your mother.
And then
this is the beginning, not the end, Gunther. I'll see you next week. Bring your lunch money.
Yeah, and it's just one of the, and you know, he's not cutting it to Gunther's face. He's cutting it to Gunther laid out in front of him,
even holding Gunther so we could see the eyes. I would have turned the tables on him. Gunther, you did it wrong. And then that gives you the option in the match at Mania to do something where Jey comes on really strong in the opening salvo of the match and Gunther gains control in the middle of the match, and that feels really consistent. It seems, you know, like he comes out House of Fire, Gunther shuts that down, basically is able to kind of get advantage, but like Jay's able to overcome the odds there at the end.
So, June 1980, Georgia. During a taping, the Assassins are beating up Mike Davis, he who would later become, I believe, part of the Rock and Roll RPMs. I think I have that right. He was also in Global for a while, he and his brother, the Davis brothers. But Dusty Rhodes comes out, makes a save, gets the crap beat out of him by the Assassins. He's wearing a white t-shirt, he's bleeding all over the place, and he needs help. And he's been warned that he may not be able to trust this guy, but he's going to put his innocence on the line and ask for the help of a babyface named Ole Anderson, who has been teaming with his quote-unquote brother, I believe, Lars Anderson, while his other brother, Gene Anderson, has been on the shelf. He's gotten a little bit older. He's a little bit injured, whatnot. They're going to take on the Assassins and the Omni in a double bull rope match for the tag team titles. Okay, that happens. Then in July, because nothing was settled in that match, becomes a cage match between the two teams for the World Tag Team titles. And they go, well, we want to keep this fair because the referees, so both teams will be able to pick an official that could be biased towards them, but if we have one that's biased towards each side, then that evens out. So the Assassins take longtime Dusty Rhodes nemesis Ivan Koloff to be their special guest referee. And hey, who would be more down the middle towards the Anderson and Rhodes team than Gene Anderson coming in? So for the main event of the Omni, it is for the tag team titles, Dusty Rhodes and Ole Anderson versus the Assassins. Everybody gets locked in the cage. The bell starts. We're having the match. Boom, boom, boom. Dusty gets in a little bit of trouble. He tags in Ole. And then everybody goes to town on Dusty Rhodes. It is a 5-on-1, 2, 3, 4. Yes, 5-on-1 beatdown in the cage. The Assassins don't really know what's going on. Ivan Koloff joins in originally where the Andersons are beating up on Dusty. And then the Assassins join in and start helping out by keeping people out. Lars, they had been doing this clever thing where Lars was a straight ahead babyface and Ole would be cutting promos like, yes, and we'll have two people in there with the opportunity to break their arms. And you kind of go, all right, that's kind of unusual for a babyface to say, but he's kind of an intense guy. That's Ole Anderson for you. And then in July of 1980, we start. Ole Anderson comes out to explain himself. He's getting browbeat by Ernie Holmes of the Pittsburgh Steelers, saying he's going to get his. And Ole just has no time for football players. Get out of here. You suck. And then he explains to Gordon Solie that this was all an elaborate ruse to lull Dusty Rhodes into trusting him on this turn, and how he waited and he waited and he waited, and he became friends with Stan Hansen, and he became friends with other guys like Tommy Rich, and he just had to smile and pretend to be their friend and whatnot. And he was like, when is Dusty ever gonna fall for this act? And Gene says, Joe, just wait. Just wait, he'll come to you. Then eventually, Dusty Rhodes needed help from someone. And he, in a moment of vulnerability, and Ole has brought a clip with him of a promo that Dusty Rhodes cut on Ole Anderson saying that this would never be over. And Ole kept this as close to his heart, to his black, cold, non-beating heart, saying, all right, it's never going to be over with me either. And I adore this. They show the turn. And then for the rest of the show, after Ole's celebration, where he's dropped all facades of being a babyface, he's actually told Gordon Solie, I never liked you either, kind of a thing, which is amazing. We then get reactions throughout the night of people involved in the angle, of people who weren't involved in the angle but had strong thoughts about it. I didn't even give you part two of the show where they talked to Lars, and Lars is like, I don't know what got into my brothers about this whole thing.
I see the link right here. I will actually end up watching that afterwards, because I know. This is
Ivan Koloff cut a great promo about, my good friend Ole Anderson has come back to me. I am so happy right now in that Ivan Koloff accent, which is nondescript but definitely not Russian. I adore Ivan Koloff because he looked 60 forever, and I think here he was like 38 or something like that. You know, Mike George, who was more of a Central States guy, comes in, and you know, he's like, I'm proud of Ole Anderson and I'd like to be a part of this. And so then he goes in for his squash match and just beats the crap out of a dude. Mike George never, I mean, he mostly hung around Central States and AWA for a short time. He did a few enhancement matches for WCW in his later years, but, you know, nothing, you know, noteworthy. We bring out the great Mephisto, who's having issues. I mean, he's trying to get a tag team title match against the Assassins with his men, Abdullah the Butcher and Mark Lewin. And you can see where Kevin Sullivan stole the Abu Dadeen stuff is directly from Mephisto, and including Mark Lewin in his stable when he did that great angle in Florida where Mark Lewin comes out of the lake as Purple Haze and they become the Ministry of Darkness type stuff. But they're all in there. We get thoughts from Kevin Sullivan and Stan Hansen, who then plug their own matches at the Omni, but they're like really upset with Ole Anderson. And then we get the Assassins, and God bless it. Chris, there is nothing that I love more than watching jacked up dudes in polo shirts and ridiculous looking masks cutting serious promos. And Jody Hamilton is on one here talking about, do not legislate these tag team titles away from me. We will have them in the ring and whatnot. I loved everything about this show. The highlights are on YouTube. Don't just watch the angle. Watch everybody's reaction. But the reason I brought this up was on both NXT and AEW and even Raw in some respects, things happen in a vacuum and we never get anybody else's reaction to them. And big earth shatter, and Dusty had a knack for this, and Ole, you know, in his instincts also did in his booking, and I'm sure he and Dusty talked about this a bit. But like, if something happens to a big star, it reverberates throughout the entire program. You know, people's, you know, like we were talking about the Death Riders thing. We said that everybody in that company should be scared of the Death Riders and should be talking about them and whatnot, and being afraid of John Moxley coming after them, that they may not be living up to those standards, etc. The retirement of Bryan Danielson should have reverberated around AEW that the Death Riders did this, to one of the great legends of professional wrestling, et cetera, et cetera. You get a to the back mentality. We have these other, it's like in a debate when somebody that the moderators don't want is winning and they go, ah, you know what? We got a lot to get to tonight. We got to get on to that type of a thing. It's one of those things where it's like, no, this is important to the world that you are trying to establish. And it's not, oh, it's just professional wrestling, so only the matches type of matter. I need to have that kind of investment in the angles to then get into the matches type of a thing. I have filibustered enough.
It's a great pick. I will mention to people, if you watch the second half of the show, you get a early Stan Lane, Dennis Condrey.
Yes!
Working together, which is fun.
They never worked together as the Midnights.
No.
And you also get a very young Steve Kern giving his thoughts on that. I omitted Steve Kern.
Can we call them the Midnight Express then?
Yes, you can. Okay. Steve Kern, who teamed with Stan Lane in the Fabulous Ones and also later became known as Skinner, by the way.
Okay.
That's who Steve Kern is, if you didn't know. Steve Kern, very good.
And then we had that enhancement match with the red shirt. I didn't catch his name.
The guy in the red jacket. Basically to show that Mike George had turned heel as well because he liked Owen Anderson.
But no, I mean, like, this is a great example, though, of what you were saying. Like, okay, making the mid-show matches matter. Whether or not, like, the Mike George thing lasts or whatever for a super long time or becomes majorly relevant in the angle, the pre-tape or the interview beforehand helps make this match mean something.
Yes. What do you think of Ole here? Because I think this is my favorite Ole, possibly.
He's such a calculating bastard of a character.
He's so happy about being an evil dick.
Yes.
That's what I love about this, is that there's like a sense of joy and a gleam in his eye about being such an evil bastard. And you'd see that in the late stage Horseman run a little bit, but it never gets to, I mean, he always has this in all of his angles and he's always turning on somebody whenever he's a babyface. You can always like go, he's gonna be a heel eventually, but there's that glee about I get to hurt people you like now. Is just amazing to me.
No, I like the his heelness is unlike like an Ivan Koloff or someone else who's like, ah, mustache twirly, right? I feel like Ole Anderson, it's like, I couldn't imagine doing anything else but making people miserable. Like this guy is a true capital M, capital B, miserable bastard who needs to see other people be miserable to be happy, which is why he thinks you're so damn stupid that he could ever change. He'll never change.
There's a little bit of Ozymandias from Watchmen. Also, it's like, oh, I did it half an hour ago kind of a thing, as opposed to, you'll never get away with this, blah, blah, blah. We'll start. It's like, no, I did it half an hour ago. I'm just telling you now kind of a thing. I love that he brought in his brother who was, or not his kayfabe,
yeah,
brother who was off TV getting injured.
The cage match angle is great. It's such good drama because it's like,
but,
you know,
but even his narration, it's like, oh, there's Lars. He was always a do-gooder moron kind of a thing. It's like he's even trashing his own family. Mm. Well, talking about it, I love, and yeah, they're playing to the back of the room. But when they start the beating on Dusty, just the assassins doing the arms out, looking around, going, I have no idea what's going on here, but I think we should take part in this whole thing. Even though they were fighting us in this match, they turn heel quick and decide to join in on the fun because they're miserable bastards as well in this whole thing. Just still trying to get over the great Mephisto, who was kind of a precursor to Skander Akbar, who took his entire act,
yes,
and then Kevin Sullivan took the rest of the act. He was best known as a Canadian, one half of the Canadian mask team called the Infernos. Kind of just lasted a short time in Georgia, not Skander Akbar, but the great Mephisto, kind of a thing. Georgia's also interesting to watch because of white meat babyface Kevin Sullivan, which is amazing on many, many levels.
Well, he's a real body transformation guy. He was always very good about changing his physique.
Power lifter.
Yeah.
So he was always short and squat, but once he started losing the hair and grew a goatee and whatnot, and then putting on the makeup and becoming evil and stuff, he really kind of aged into the role, whereas before it was like everybody thought he was going to be, you know, the next Tommy Rich. Yeah. Or Austin Idol, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah.
But boy, do I love it. This is possibly my favorite heel turn, I think. Just because of the levels to it and because Ole Anderson was such a smart booker. Yeah, sure, it was for himself. And yeah, Ole and Dusty are just two rampaging egomaniacs in the 80s in terms of booking big money programs for themselves. But hey, they brought the goods whenever they could. So I have no issue with it. But yeah, I wish there was this kind of level of thought to why the Bucks went in there and gave the V trigger to Swerve.
Yeah, I guess I'm willing to forgive a lot more for bigger characters like an Ole Anderson or a Dusty Rhodes, or I mean, even like a Macho Man Randy Savage or whatever. Like, if you've got a good story, then I mean, going back to AEW, like watching this versus watching the fallout from Dynasty on this week's Dynamite, the main event picture, the world title picture, the interplay between the Death Riders and the Bucks, all of it feels murky and unclear. You watch this one episode of TV after the big show, you know kind of where everyone stands right now.
Yeah. And I don't mind murky and unclear as long as you pay it off. You know, if it's a conspiracy kind of a thing, but I don't think we're doing the usual suspects in professional wrestling.
Well, there's interesting murky and unclear, and then there's uninteresting murky.
Yes,
and
there's people making stories in their head and telling you it makes sense on Twitter when it doesn't.
Right. Yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, not every, indeed, sometimes things that start off murky and unclear ultimately yield an interesting story, but also sometimes things that start off murky and unclear either never resolve, or when they do, you're like, oh, well, that's just a bad story.
Yeah. So next week, we're going to preview Stand and Deliver. We're going to preview both nights of WrestleMania. I think we're both going to try and select a match from one of previous Manias that we liked for kind of an impromptu Vader Club, but we may not get to it because there may not be time. Who knows? But and if something big happens in the news or AEW, we'll discuss that. But let's end it there. This has been Shake Them Ropes. You can follow me at CrapGame13 on X. You can follow Shake Them Ropes, all one word, also on X. We're part of Voices Wrestling Podcasting Network. I also do shows over on Fight Game Media. Do the Dynamite Show Wednesday nights, about 20 minutes after Dynamite goes off the air. We go live, myself and Paul Ace Fontaine. We are, because we got some super chats, reviewing the Fight for the Fallen 2021 over the weekend, Sunday night. That'll drop in the podcatchers, and he'll announce when that goes live. That is, of course, the episode where Nick Gage went up against Chris Jericho with a pizza cutter, and they lost their Domino's sponsorship, but that'll be this Sunday as well. And of course, I'll be on Fightful next week after WrestleMania's after I've watched 6 hours of wrestling on both nights doing shows with Sean Ross Sapp. That'll be fun. Chris gonna get his plugs in now as well.
Yes, guitar lessons, if you're interested in them, hit me up on the Instagram. I will get you going. Guitar, bass, music production, all these sorts of things. My music is up on Spotify. I do actually plan on getting a release out there in the next couple of weeks. I just need to like not have food poisoning anymore, which I will hopefully not have by the end of the weekend.
Plug for food poisoning.
Poo.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Garrett Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. BetterMan is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.